Hello, and welcome to another session of Hashtag Faneo, where following creates leaders and leaders create a following. So I want to jump right on into this part three of our Language of Relationships session. So we've been unpacking some very critical vocabulary words that will help us, hopefully as adults, to reshape the way we have conversations with our children and help them to understand that there's a difference in how they are going to relate to the individuals that they share a learning space with. And so we've arrived at our third one, which is friends. Just as a refresher, I want to reshare what we've discussed was going to be our basis for defining friendships. Where are we coming from with this idea? So we said for our intermediate kids, we'd say it was someone whose core values mirror your own. Okay? And for our more kid-friendly primary language, we'd say that friends are someone whose behaviors you believe are good enough to copy and be proud of. Okay? So that's important, because when you think of the most important words in both of those definitions, although worded differently, the essence is the same. When you extract the words that are very critical, you should come up with core values and proud. From both of those definitions, core values and proud. How do kids develop that? Well, this is the entry point for parenting. Communities, adults that are touching on children, this is our responsibility. Helping kids to understand what's good enough to be proud of. And as a family, what's important enough to be considered your core values. They don't just come to the world knowing it. And unfortunately, they can't always watch our behaviors as adults to figure it out. For whatever reason, they can't always just look at what's going on around them and say, oh, we must value that. Okay? So it's our job to help shape that. When I was growing up, and some of you may be able to relate, we had television, just like the kids today have television. We had TGI Fridays. We have Family Matters, shout out to the TGI Friday lineup, Step by Step, Full House, other shows like The Cosby Shows. And as we got older and some of those more controversial conversations, we had A Different World. We had Degrassi Junior High and Degrassi High. These were all television series and shows that in a way we were exposed to. Here's key for me growing up. We didn't just watch television alone. When the shows were over, especially on commercials, it was high conversation time. My father, my mom would spend time questioning, what did you just see? What resonated with you? What stood out? What did you like? Here's what we noticed. You know, it's important that you do the same thing with your children. Just watch TV with them one day and notice what they laugh at. Notice if they ever get quiet on something or seem to sit in a space of wonderment. Like, that's so important that you're paying attention to how they watch TV, how they respond to what they're watching, because it's a glimpse at what they're going to look for and find pleasure in when they leave your presence. So television isn't all the way bad. There are some pointers that we can make if we were having a totally different discussion. But for this discussion, it's not all terrible. And we got to be honest, the world has changed to where television, it is huge now. The streaming, downloading, the devices that you can use now. I mean, it's present. The technology used of television, it's here. And it's not going to go anywhere. So we have to learn how to work within this new structure and not just stay in a space where we're unhappy about it. It's fine to utilize television, but maybe not so much in isolation of an adult who can ask the questions and pay attention to what your child is turned on and off by. I will never forget certain episodes of TV where my parents were having full-fledged conversation with my siblings and I. And how it shaped me to this day. So it is important. And it does allow you, just like a good book, it allows you to go places that sometimes you wouldn't naturally go on your own because it's already out there, right? But it also allows you a soft entry into some of the hard conversations. So don't run from the television. It is what it is. Let's embrace it, but let's be strategic and not leave our kids idle. When we're talking about this idea of a core value, you're responsible, parents, for shaping that. You are responsible, community leaders. You are responsible for modeling what those core values in your community look like. Is my neighborhood going to be littered with trash? Or am I going to lead the conversation that that's not okay? Right? So these are all important when we're talking about friendships. We're probably thinking, well, where are we going with this? It starts at home. It starts in our neighborhoods. It starts with leadership. Okay? Once you have that, the testing ground becomes school, because you're not there. Right? We know it's not what you do when my eyes are on you that's important, right? It's what you're doing when you're away from me. Can you manage it? Are you who you really think you are? And are you who you say you are? And those two questions are so important, because once you drop your kid off to the school and they're intermingling with their peers, and then they get trickled down into a smaller group of their classmates, they are going to be with people who may or may not have the same core value focus as yours. Right? So you know that. You know that going in. Now your child has to be strong enough to understand how to interact with people that are different, which brings you back to the home life, where if you're having these discussions and watching some of these shows that have a difference in core value, but still can find the value in the person, or still find the value behind what's really going on, you gotta be able to transfer that into the classroom. I wanna share a quick story with you. So I have a nephew, very straight and narrow, just a straight and narrow kid. He's a second grader at the time, and there are these twins at his school. One of the twins in his classroom really wanted to be his friend, but his behavior was completely off the map. And my nephew couldn't handle it. He's like, no. So I remember him telling me about the kid, and the kid comes up to me one day, because I worked in the same building. He comes up to me and he goes, you know, your nephew won't play with me. He never plays with me on the playground. So I go home and talk to my nephew about it. Like, hey, one of the twins came up to me and he mentioned that you never play with him. You know, he really wants to get to know you and hang out and play with you at the playground, but he says you don't even give him the time of day. So my nephew responds with his second grade self, and he says, well, he's bad. He stays on red and blue, and he's in trouble all the time. And most of the time, he doesn't even get recess. I don't want to be around kids who are bad. I'm not a bad kid. And I was like, wow, that's pretty insightful that you figured that out. And you do want to create boundaries, which we're going to explore a little bit in our next session. And in our next session, we'll talk about those boundaries and what that should look like. But for the sake of this discussion, I thought it was pretty insightful that he knew those boundaries for himself. Like, I don't want to mingle with the bad kid. But I sat down and I talked to him and I said, well, listen, the behavior chart is determined by an adult with a different set of rationale for moving a kid up and down, which is a whole nother conversation we're not going to delve into with the behavior chart. But I do want to point out to our classroom leaders, when you are using that chart and it's a public display, you must be consistent and have some level of fairness going on there. Because what you're also conveying to your the students in the class is that this is the bad kid. Every time that kid moves down on the clip chart, everyone knows that kid for the bad kid. And I know we say that lightly and like, yeah, we know, but I want you to understand what it's doing to the other kids in the classroom. Because here's the conversation I had with my nephew. I told him to understand that that chart is based on that teacher's personality, whether they're rigid or flexible. I'm more flexible in student behaviors. Some teachers are very rigid. So the very simple thing like getting out of your seat could warrant a clip down. Something like going to get a pencil or talking during the time a teacher said don't talk could clip you down. Something like sometimes standing up for yourself when you know you didn't do something you're accused of, and kids who are always accused feel like they have to defend themselves and they get angry a lot faster, that kid's clip is coming down. So it's an adult thing that I think we need to really work on. Like, how you're moving that clip and why, and is it a reasonable move, and what is it conveying to your student, the rest of your students in the room, and more importantly, the student that you're doing this to, because it is giving a message. So what I helped my nephew to understand is, well, as we sat down and talked, I said, okay, well, talk to me about the things that this child does well in your eyes, because the clip chart is not based on you. It's based on the teacher. And he said, oh, he goes, well, he is helpful. I said, okay, let's go with that. Tell me some ways that he's helpful. And he gave quite a few things. And I said, okay, tell me some things you like about this child. And he gave quite a few things. And I said, look, kiddo, you're not always going to be hanging out with people that are just like you. But how do you know that you really are the good kid if you don't hang out with kids who are just different in their behaviors? How do you even know you're the good one? What if you start picking up the behaviors and before you know it, you can end up doing some of the same things? And isn't it okay to make a mistake and still have good friends? I remember when I looked him in the eye and said, so you've given me some really great things about who this kid is that you've noticed, but that chart has overrode it and you can't even see the good in him. And so I then turned him and I said, hey, don't you think he deserves to have friends who are good too? And like in school suspension, putting all the bad kids who misbehave in one room, hoping that they figure out and have an epiphany to be the good kids in the room, is a silly thing to do. So I asked him, hey, if he can't have any good friends, what kind of friends is he going to be left with? What kinds of friends are going to receive him? And he said, the other ones who don't make good choices. I said, so what you're doing is saying, I'm not going to allow you a good friend. You're also saying, I'm not strong enough in who I am to have a friend who does not necessarily experience the world through behavior the way I do. You've never been picked on in school because you've always been the quiet kid who gets his work done and you're pleasant. But you've never been the boisterous one who had to fight for yourself and stand up for you and mess up probably 9 out of 10 times. But the 10th time when you explode, because that's the time you did it right, the teacher only sees the 9 wrong. See the charts for the grown-ups. And I told him, stop looking at the chart to measure the child. You look at the child from the lens of a child and see what you like about him and ask yourself, can I stand next to this kid and stay who I am? Can I teach this kid a few things? Can I learn anything from them? Because just because he's on red doesn't make him a terrible person, right? Just means he misbehaved for that moment and now he's stuck there because of the chart. Which again, as a side note, we are going to have some discussions about this chart stuff. We are really going to delve into that as well as we continue to build in our conversations and discussions on this relationship of friendships. So again, I want to reiterate the importance. Parents, have a conversation. Build the core in your child. Be sympathetic and empathetic to the understanding that we are not built to be alone. We are not built by design to be alone. We're not. Friendship is not a request then. It's not something that kids wake up just saying, I would like one. No, it is a requirement. Friendship is a requirement. When you get that in your minds and let it settle there and then matriculate down into your heart, you will recognize that this is such an important conversation that you must participate in, because your child is becoming whether or not you're participating. I'm gonna say that again. Your child is becoming whether or not you're participating. They're becoming, and there's a pause there because it's to fill in the blank. What are they becoming? We don't know if you're not participating. You're definitely not gonna know. Classroom teachers, as classroom leaders, your job is to just pay attention and use your words as adults. We have this gift of both hindsight and foresight, and we know when children are going down the wrong path. Don't beat them up about it. Ask more questions than you do telling. Ask them, what attracts you to that student? What do you really know about that child? Ask them. When we go into our next session and I unpack some of the conversation I had with fourth graders about this whole idea of boundaries and friendships, it blew me away how much they don't know and how much power they have and don't know exists because we didn't tell them. When you release that inner power that you can stand up for yourself and speak up for yourself in these relationships, it's so key. And it opens them up to saying, I can do this. And they become participants in their own narrative. That's what we want. But we can't do that if all stakeholders feel like the kids are on their own. They should just know better. They're not gonna know better. They're gonna be what they see. They're gonna be what they see until we interrupt it and we pluck them out of certain situations and we place them someplace else for a time. And then we dust them off a bit. Like, hey, let me get you back together. Let me put you over here for a while. Not as a punishment, but because I care. Because I care. And our children just need to know that. Let's start taking the mystery out of what we're doing. If you remove a kid from a group, don't just move them. Move them and then go tell them, I'm moving you here because I can see you're struggling in the group. You're so distracted. I want to send you back. Because, come on, parents, teachers, don't you want to put them back where they belong? Or is it your goal to watch them suffer all the time? Think about that. You take a kid out of their natural environment of interacting and just throw them over there because of a behavior you didn't like in the moment and leave them there to just wallow in it. And that's the key time to go shape them and say, hey, I need you to know why you're here. First of all, do you know why you're here? They're going to think, oh, it's because I'm yelling out and misbehaving in a group. You'll say, yeah, that's part of it. But here's the bigger part of it. I want to see your brain on this paper. I want to know what you can do. I want to see you finish and help you finish this assignment so that you can have the rest of your day. See, take the mystery out. Stop trying to control everything. Adults, stop it. We are all participants in this narrative of shaping children. They are also a part of the discussion and conversation. So we can't keep leaving the main characters out of their own story. Right? Let's get these children back involved. Let's be more transparent in kindness. Okay? So we're going to do some heavy lifting when it comes to what this looks like in the classroom. But I wanted to get the entry point. Like, how do we get in on this? Just start talking to your kids. Teachers, start pointing out the things that you see in their friendships that you believe need reshaping. And sometimes it's just telling the child, I think you guys need to go apart for a while and then come back when you can test the waters. So work on your friendship in the classroom with me so I can watch you. Ask them, can you do that for me? Work on your friendship here. When we have opportunities to pick friends to work with, I want you to pick each other. But I want you to let me be here to help. When you go to recess, I want you to go apart. Who's a good friend, person A, that you could play with that can help you work on being more kind? Who have you identified in our class that has kind ways? They know. I promise you, they know. Let them tell you. And then you say, all right, let's go to that child right now. Hey, so-and-so, this child picked you as a person who knows how to be kind. During recess, when there's not really any adult supervision, they need to work on kindness. And they think you're a great person to do that with. So I want them, could you find ways to include this person in your group today and maybe the rest of this week so they can learn how to be kind and talk about kind things that you do? Whatever that is, create the conversation, create the intervention, create the momentum there. And do the same thing for child B. Is there someone that you can find that will help you work better on this skill that's different than this one's pick? And they make their selection, you make the introduction, you've already interrupted it. You've already done a big thing, teachers, educators. You've done the heavy lifting. Now you manage it. They come back to the room. You provide opportunities for them to pick a friend. You just say, for this next activity, we're picking a friend. Or you say, for this next activity, we're only picking a classmate. You must pick one of your other classmates, but it can't be one of your friends. See that language now? And you see how the kids in their mind will start to adjust. Oh, I'm picking someone that's just someone that's here every day that I may not know. I might not even really get along with, but that's okay because this adult is in the room to help manage that because it's important for me to learn how to work with people I really, really like and people that I really, really don't. Okay? So that's all we have for now, my Finale Prep hashtaggers. We have definitely reached the end of our Finale destination today on this topic. But no worries, you can keep the conversation going. And listen, we've gotten so much additional following that Anchor has opened up an opportunity for us to create messages. So you can leave us a message on Finale. Let us know what you think. Let us know your thoughts. If you have any questions, if you reshaped your thinking, found something super insightful, put it in a message and we can add it to our discussion and start some of our conversations off with your feedback. So until next time, remember, when fair is not an option, hashtag Finale. Thanks for tuning in.